Welcome to Grind.
Grind.
Sell.
Sell.
Elevate.
Elevate.
With your host, Tizer Evans, a podcast dedicated to bringing you the top minds in all areas of business, entrepreneurship, sales, and leadership. Let's elevate together.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining me on Grind, Sell, and Elevate. This is your host, Tizer Evans, and I'm here with Alex Jarbo. Alex, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you're a writer for the Bigger Pockets podcast, which is well known. As I'll be honest with you, you don't even know this, but my wife listened to that when we were developing our real estate company. We have a small real estate company, and when we were wanting to get more into that, that was like her go-to, like absorbed all that information. Yeah. So wonderful. But Alex, if you could introduce us to who you are, what you're about, and you know, a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, my name is Alex Jarbo. I'm the founder and CEO of Sargon Investments. And I started about 6-7 years ago in just the real estate world, and things have really taken off in the last like 5 years or so. But my journey started when I was 18, joined the Marine Corps when I was 18, and then served for about 4.5 years. My last year in the military, decided sort of didn't want to re-enlist. And so I really started to look at like different things outside of the military, different investing classes. Crypto, stocks, real estate really caught my attention. And same thing what you just said, I picked up the Bigger Pockets books when I first started talking about learning about flipping houses, rehab stuff. I got pretty deep into multifamily stuff as well, just learning about the different, just how to evaluate property. And I joined a flipping mentorship. And what I realized that the person that was in charge of that flipping mentorship, all of their long-term wealth was tied into short-term rentals. So I got him on a call, and I was asking him different questions about short-term rentals, how to choose a market. And he was the one who actually helped me choose Asheville, where we currently live. And literally the day I got out of the military, moved straight here and got my real estate license shortly after that. And I just started looking for a property for myself. And what I realized at that time was everything was either way out of my price range, or it wouldn't have. Anything that was in my price range wouldn't have done well as a short-term rental in my eyes. Maybe it would have done well as a long-term rental where we could put a long-term tenant in there, but there wasn't really anything unique that would draw people to that, like the property that I was looking at that time in my price range. So we decided to build our first real estate investment, which is crazy to think about now, just dove headfirst. But one turned into two really quickly, two turned into four, brought on some investor capital. And to just today, like just right now alone, we're developing over $10 million worth of short-term rentals, hoping to triple that next year.
Oh, perfect. Well, thank you. And thank you for your service.
Oh, I appreciate you, brother.
Yeah. I lived in Oceanside for a couple of years. So
I got a lot of friends in that area.
Yeah. So I'm sure we've shared some of the same bars at some point. But I want to focus on the short-term rental. What is a short-term rental in your mind for people who may be listening to this that aren't experienced with, you know, real estate? What does that mean to you? What does that mean to the market?
Yeah. So what I mainly operate in is 30 days and under. So any type of property that's 30 days and under, but we also take some midterm properties as well. So like when you're looking at properties that have like markets that have a little bit of a stricter rules on short-term rentals, that you could go 30 days plus up to 6 months where those rules get a little bit less strict. But I like to focus, in my eyes, short-term rentals is 30 days and under, vacation rentals. So when I think of a vacation rental, I think of 30 days and under.
Gotcha. Okay. So that makes sense. So you're buying these properties, and then it's more of like a Airbnb type situation?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, Airbnb, VRBO, and then we can talk about this briefly later on. It's like I like to take people off the platform and push them towards my direct booking site eventually. So yeah, it's just we like to advertise on Airbnb, VRBO, but then eventually get them off of those so we can sort of control the guest.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure then you don't have to pay a cut of the revenue as well, right?
Yeah, and you just, I mean, I've been saying this for the last 6 months. But people have been preaching it for forever, is if your property lives on a specific site, don't, like the best quote I've heard on is, don't build your property on someone else's land. Like they control your property, like the Airbnb, VRBO, they have full control over your business. So I've never been a fan of that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And so I know you said you have got a goal to you know, have a book of $10 million, right, in a relatively short amount of time. And it was interesting, you know, I was reading again through your bio and some of the things we had talked about, and did you want to get into cabins?
Yeah. Right? And we've already done that. Okay. So like we've already practically crossed the $10 million mark. That's what we just have on the books right now. And so I like to focus on some, if you look at my website, some sort of like themed type of property. So, what I realized last year was the best use of my time is to build 6 to 9 cabins at the same time and almost like a cluster development. Like I like to say micro resorts. Yeah. But there's some sort of theme. There's some sort of theme to them, whether it be A-frames, tree houses, cottages, chalets, barn type, like modern contemporary barn style houses. So that's where the uniqueness comes from. I like to say Instagrammable properties. We're building Instagrammable properties that where the property itself is an experience outside of the city that the guest is visiting. So it's honestly I'm not gonna say it's easy, but when I come into a project wanting to build 6 to 9 cabins, that's usually anywhere between like a $2 to $3.5 million project. So I'm focused on doing like two to three of those projects at the same time. In any given, say, 6 to 8 months.
Awesome. So when you're thinking about, and you said you moved to Asheville because that's where you wanted to start. And
yeah.
I apologize, my pit bull is at my door.
Oh, you're fine, man. I'm sure you hear my dog scratching at the door right now.
he's hitting the door with his nose constantly until I let him in. Yeah, I know, exactly. I'm like, well, man, you missed the boat, dude. You missed the boat for the interview. Now you don't get the knowledge, Slater. But when you're thinking about like where to build these, is it all in North Carolina? Are you looking at different parts of the country? Talk to us about like, especially that time, it's a very niche, right? What you're doing and you're niching down, which I love. And I think it does make it more, because I live right outside of Houston and we have Wimberley, Texas, which is close. And they have these yurts that are they look incredible, right? I'm like, shit, I'm gonna stay in that for a night, right? Yeah. So I get it's the same type of theme.
Yeah, and I bet you see those numbers that they're getting, and you're like, that's way more than any type of normal house would do. Like just $200-$400 a night. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's my favorite question. What you just asked, and I feel like I can talk for an hour on that specific topic. But when people come to me about like, okay, what market should I invest in? You're gonna like just any type of real estate you book, you read, they say you should start in your backyard. And I like to stay that for the most part, but it's exactly what you just said. Whenever that conversation comes up, I like to say, think of an area in your market where if you live in a busy metro market, I don't recommend doing what I teach with like the unique properties in a busy metro market. Think of an area where people in your city like to take an extended weekend vacation that might be an hour, 2, 3 away. I like to give the two extreme examples of you have New York City. People will drive to upstate New York for a weekend trip, 3, 4 hours any weekend. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the other side of the country, you look at San Diego, people drive up to Big Bear Lake all the time to do weekend vacations there. So when it comes to market selection, I like to stack a unique property with a unique market that's like within an hour to two driving distance, because especially if you're just first starting and just doing it yourself, I recommend sticking within that hour or two because you're going to be driving up there a lot.
Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to Grindstone Elevate this week. This episode is brought to you by Odin's Rune Clothing Company. Odin's Rune is a clothing company that is for those people that are burning the boats to live a purpose-driven life, those who can appreciate the Vikings and Nordic culture's sense of adventure, their sense of loyalty, their sense of honor above all things. So if you're into a motivational type clothing theme that's got a little bit of a Nordic twist, go head over to odinsrune.com. And if you guys put in code friend out of Odin, you'll save 20% on anything in the store. So again, that's code friend of Odin for 20% off of odinsrune.com.
No, I think that Big Bear is a perfect example. I don't know New York that well, nor am I a huge fan of that state, but I'm a California native. And so I spent 15 years in SoCal, and it's true. People from SD, they'd roll up to Big Bear all the time. But my in-laws and my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law live there, and they do that all the time. They take their kids, go up to Big Bear, go snowboarding, skiing, or the summer's gorgeous. So that makes a ton of sense. And I'm even thinking about that, right? Wimberley's 2 hours from me because it's right outside of Austin.
There you go.
Yep. Now we go to Fredericksburg, and my neighbor who's in real estate, he bought a $1 million property in Fredericksburg. and then built some, it was like 20 acres, and he built little homes on it, and now he rents them out. It's
right? Yeah, it's very incredible. Similar to what we're doing. Yep.
Yeah, and he calls it the sanctuary.
I love it.
Yeah, plug to Larry.
Love it.
Yeah, exactly. So now is this something that you're looking long-term strategy to sell as well? Or is this like, hey, I'm going to sit and plot and keep these for 5-10 years? Or this like, this is more of a short-term rental, see how it goes for the next 36 months, and then maybe pivot and sell?
Yeah. So, I mean, my investors know the first four JVs I did. And then now I'm working with funds and stuff because I was raising capital at a certain point, but now I'm just working with funds that are comfortable working in the short-term rental space where I'm essentially the deal finder and operator. But my investors know that we're married to 8 to 10 years together, at least with the general partnership. With some of the deals that we're doing, maybe we do refinance them out of the deal. Sure. But we for sure do it on a deal by deal basis. But yeah, it's a long-term hold. Preferably, like I've talked to a lot of multifamily investors that like to hold on to them forever. I'll tell you, the properties that my wife and I own at 100% without any investors, we're never going to sell those properties. Just because of how they cash flow. Like our smallest property, which is about 800 square foot, I mean, cash flow is like $46,000 a year alone after all bills are paid, after debt service, everything. It did $46,000 last year, and that was a small 800 square foot A-frame.
So another question just came to mind as you were talking, because, you know, someone who's listening to this conversation right get-go, right? And they're like, okay, Alex knows what he's doing. You know, he's spent time, he's built up to this. Like, I'm not a person that can go just drop $2 or $3 million, right? Or I don't know how to raise money. So yeah. There's someone that wanting to break in, and I, you know, obviously know that we already talked about this. So you know who I've followed a lot and what he preaches. I'm talking about Grant Cardone. He says, you know, buy your home. Don't buy single family homes for rentals. You know, Grant's very passionate about that. I've invested in Cardone Capital. That's just been, you know, easier for me to do that, give him the money. And I do get my checks every month. So it's been a great experience so far, but
I just met his top investor actually at a conference I was just at.
Okay. He's the real deal, but I'm curious, where should people start? Cause everyone's got their own take on this. And I think it's fine to buy two or three homes that are within your community, maybe within your neighborhood that you can manage, but you know, obviously people got very strong opinions against that or for.
Yeah. When Grant's whole thing is like, don't purchase the house you live in initially. Cause he just purchased this massive house in Malibu. So it's like, once you make a certain amount of money, you can break that rule. But I definitely followed that rule for a very long time. About my wife and I lived in an apartment for the first 5 years of our, or sorry, for the first 3 years of our marriage, we lived in an apartment. And then prior to that, I lived in an apartment. I didn't own a house myself. We had five or six properties that were cash flowing like crazy before we decided to even think about purchasing a house. That's a completely different conversation. But yeah, no, I mean, I think Grant's mainly talking about, I mean, one, his big things about like, if something happens to that one property, you are at a 0% occupancy compared to having it rented out. He's had people like Brian Page on, which has been like, he's the BNB formula guy, the passive income guy. He's had Brian Page on his podcast. So I don't think he's mainly talking about short-term rentals in that part, because I mean, you'd be lucky to get right now in this market. I mean, it's shifting a little bit, but in this market, you're lucky to get anywhere between 500 to 1500 a month cash flow out of a single family house, compared to like some of the short-term rentals we're developing, like I said, are cash flowing $6,000-$7,000 a month. I think if we're speaking in terms of that, I don't think he's talking about like the cash flows are just ridiculous in some of these short-term rentals, and especially for people who are just starting. You can start with like a tiny house on wheels that costs like $120,000 and plop it in on someone's land. You can start with the yurts and put all of that on a credit card if you have access to the land. Even if you don't have access to the land, you can buy a small plot and do the same thing. Especially with like what happened with COVID, like people are very comfortable sort of traveling off the beaten path a little bit to do some of a more of a unique stay, like a glamping situation, like a yurt. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. And I apologize. I did commingle two different types of investments.
Everybody. Oh no, I love talking about it, man.
I was talking about single family homes versus short-term rentals, you know, what Alex is doing. But you know, it just kind of got me thinking. It also brings up another question. As you were saying, I was thinking like, cause you could do both, right? Like if I bought a home, given that the property we're in, the right to, like, no one, that where I live in Katy, Texas, no one's fucking coming here to vacation. So, you know, I mean, it wouldn't make a lot of sense.
You're in a military town. Yeah,
right. So no one's coming here to vacation. But, you know, it got a ton of families here, right? So it would be much better for one type of investment versus the other. And so I think that that comes along with market selection, like we were talking about. But what's interesting, though, what you did hit, is it would make more sense to me, though, to do what you're doing more than buying a single family home and renting it for a long-term rental because of the multiplier. As long as, if I went, to your point, if I went 2.5 hours outside of Houston, I could probably find a piece of property that was dirt cheap, plop 3 or 4 yurts on it, build out a little oasis, and then as opposed to buying two single family homes here in my neighborhood, right?
Yeah, you want to be in a market that, like, people are comfortable driving to, because then when they're coming to your property, a lot of times when you're looking at short-term rentals, maybe in a busy metro city, the first thing you're thinking about is how far away is this from the city? That sort of goes away a little bit when you go out in a little more of the rural area, because people are comfortable driving. Like most of our all of our properties are not in the city of Asheville. So this goes to the people who are listening that are like, this is not going to work because my city doesn't allow for short-term rentals. My Asheville itself, short-term rentals are illegal to do it in. All of our properties are in the county, which is legal to do. So like, I just pull up my map with my real estate agent, and then we just highlight the city, and then we purchase land on the outskirts of the city. So all of our properties are within like 15 to 25 minutes of downtown, which is nice because people get the rural landscape of like the mountains or the trees or whatever market you're in. And then if they want to drive into the city, they can get that feeling, or they can get that experience as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I mean, that's some of the most beautiful, you know, country in the country is right outside of Asheville. Now, you said one thing too that I wanted to touch on because it's important, and it's something that's kind of elusive to me. You know, if you're a new guy in real estate, you know you want to do bigger things, and you're like, shit, well, I got a couple properties, I'm cash flowing pretty well, but I still can't get to that $3 or $4 or $5 million property that I want to be able to purchase, right, to get me to the next level. So I got to go out and raise funds. You know, talk to us about how you made that journey and how difficult, how easy, like, how did you start there?
Yeah, so I started, this was the beginning of this year, maybe early of last year, where I'd started putting the systems in place. I'm not going to say it was easy, but when it's like with anything, once you find the system, man, it's like go, in terms of putting together the right stuff. The biggest thing, honestly, is it was getting on podcasts like this. And when I was, I'm not raising capital right now, but when I was, I think we did 4 million in 3 months is what we raised. Now, one of those investors was like 500, 600 grand. So that was a big chunk of it. But we did raise 4 million that we could have utilized. We only ended up using like 2.5 of it because I didn't have the deal flow at the time. But the process was getting on podcasts that were like multifamily driven. So you're very familiar with that, where some people who were in the multifamily space, I felt like a lot of people were getting crushed with it, like who are trying to purchase them themselves. Just the cap rates were so compressed, and they still are. I mean, you're getting like, so looking at some projects at 3.5-4% cap, if you're lucky, in some markets. So it was a very easy transition when I was raising capital to make that transition from multifamily to short-term rentals. And then backing up even further, as I'm talking about that, I thought about, I just started with friends and family. Not necessarily family, just very close friends. My first investor was like 100 grand, and it was like one of my best friends. And that's where I started. Is I have this thing called, you guys can Google this, it's called a memory jogger. And what it is, it's like 600 professions and people in your life of different categories. And it's literally like, okay, who's your dentist? Who's your doctor? Like, who's your blah, 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 who's your blah, blah, blah. And you go through the whole list and you just write down a name. And then you reach out to them and see if they're interested in the deal. So when people are first raising capital, that's what I did. I started with the memory jogger, and then I went on to getting, it wasn't that many podcasts. It was like 6 or 7 podcasts, but I was very intentional. I'm like, I wanted to get on multifamily. They knew what I was talking about. I was talking about short-term rentals. But it was like, it was a nice mix for the host to be able to have like a short-term rental person on, just to get a different vantage point of a different real estate class.
Yeah, absolutely. So you went on the podcast and then you had guests kind of reach out to you that heard the podcast that knew that.
So and we systematized that. We used a software called Syndication Pro, and it was just synced up to a button on our Squarespace page, like on our company website. They just click invest now, and it's just the same thing with any other thing. They self-accredit themselves through the platform. I get a little notification, and then they get access to my my Calendly link at that time, and then we just schedule a call and talk about their goals and everything. Yeah,
wow, that's awesome.
I did that for about 3 months. Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, well, you made that. That's what I love about systems and processes, right? If you put a nice system and process into place, and you just know how to work it.
Yeah.
And totally different, but I was just,
it's like with any business, man. It's like, okay, right. I didn't have money, but I had the deals. And then like in 3 months, it was like that. It was complete opposite. It was like, I had too much money I was playing with and not enough deals. And now we're like in the, I've realized that finding a good balance is essential to that.
So in short-term rentals, is it, cause I've had guys on the podcast before that were, big into wholesaling. And so do you network with wholesalers to help bring you deals, or they're out scouting? Because I mean, or is that not really in their?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you, man. I haven't even thought of that avenue just because my real estate agent keeps me busy.
Good.
We're focused right now on purchasing some of these like larger communities of like, we just got a 6 cabins and a historic house under contract with like 10 acres. And when I talk about like my goal of doing 650 cabins or units, that is one way that we're getting to that is like that there's what I'm realizing is some people are coming to the end of their business plans, especially with higher interest. This is my guess. It's like higher interest rates. They can't refinance out of their commercial loan into another loan, or maybe the numbers don't work out. So we're coming in, purchasing these cabin communities, doing different value adds with like, we have systems to like raise the occupancy, overall just make the operations better. And then I like to look at properties that have some sort of acreage attached to it where we can build more properties. So when it comes to your original question about wholesaling, I haven't even gone that avenue just because there's only like maybe 10 or 15 of those communities that exist in my market right now. And my agents kept me busy with those.
Make a good agent then.
Oh yeah. She's better. I'm a licensed real estate agent, and I was like, she's way better than me. Like, she can have that business. Like, it makes zero sense for me to try to do that.
Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to Grind So Elevate again this week. I did want to let you know that I do have an additional podcast called The Book Legion. The Book Legion is a podcast where it's 10 to 15 minutes. I jump on once a week, also with the co-host Kevin Diaz, and we chat about books, about the core pillars of our lives to help us get better. So a lot of personal development books on spirituality, sales, leadership, health, wellness, you name it. Those are the books we cover. We have over 55 episodes out already that's been up for over the last year and a half. It's just as big as Grind So Elevate. We give a lot of really great feedback. So we'd love to hear from you, books, reviews that you like, and then also the books that you'd want us to cover. So if you haven't heard of the Book Legion, go check it out either at thebooklegion.com where you can subscribe, or on any outlets where they have podcasts, you'll be able to find the Book Legion. Thanks so much.
Yeah, well, it sounds like your hands in a lot of different pots. And so sometimes it's, make your thing the main thing and then let other people do what they're right. good at.
Absolutely.
I want to go back to and touch on this theme properties. So like, how did you come up with the concept of cabins? Like what about that just kind of spoke to you as like a niche to get into?
I love that question. I just, I was scrolling through Instagram one day with 6-7 years ago, and it was like, I was like, oh, that's a really cool property. I feel like A-frames are everywhere now. Like, they made like a resurgence. When I was in Big Bear Lake a couple of years back, I was like, they're everywhere here, the 70s and 80s and stuff.
Yeah.
It was just a thought that was like, I would be proud to stay in this. Like, I would be taking pictures of my property and everything. Like, if I was visiting, if my wife and I were at the time, my girlfriend and I were staying in that. So that's where that idea came from. And it was like, okay, at the time before COVID, you can underwrite a property as a long-term rental. And if it didn't work out, you could just rent it out as a long-term rental. Now it's like the exits either to do like midterm rentals or just to exit. But the theme properties just came from that. It was like, I would be proud to stay in that. And then after our first year of renting that, it's like, okay, that worked. We built 2 more right next to it. And those are in the process of being developed right now. But yeah, the theme properties, I just see that constantly on Instagram now. And it's like gotten to a point where like there's marketplaces out there now with like traveling influencers that like to stay at properties like this. So, and it, what I've also realized, man, is the theme properties help with the seasonality of a certain market, where it's like the property during the down season becomes the experience, where like that's what draws people to that area is the property. And then during the high season, it's the city itself.
And that was actually, I just wrote down the next question, because you said a couple things. One, I've got a good influencer friend that lives out in San Antonio, and she gets, you know, she wouldn't sit in the yurts. Like the people, you know, will have her fly all over to go check out their stuff. And then, you know, she's a big mom influencer and she does a great job of it. Now, when it comes to marketing, because I know my wife would be, she's a skeptic on everything, if we're being honest. But so if I said, hey, we're going to go build some cabins right outside.
Already
right
a big sell.
Right outside of Austin, right? You know, but, you know.
Yeah.
And so yeah, my wife would probably be like, Ty, I don't know if this is the best, you know, decision, because I think it would be cool. We would love to do that. So to your point, like, how does the marketing strategy come into play? Is it like you got to push people to them, or is it really just picking a location that's going to draw people to it? Or do you have to do a little bit of marketing dollars to make sure it's always full? Like, how do we talk about the occupancy?
Yeah, man. So if you hop on Airbnb's website right now, they just come, there was like 4 or 5 months ago, they went through a complete redesign where like literally their platform is targeting unique short-term rental stays. They have categories and everything, and every area is different. But if you hop on their site and play around with the categories and what pops up on the main page, those are the unique properties in that market. So I just say, just emulate those properties. Don't copy the exact floor plan, but see what's unique and copy those. And I mean, that's just with any business, right? Like you see what works and you emulate that. So that's going to be your proof right there that these type of properties are the top properties in the market. Like my first A-frame is like the number three property in my market right now out of like 4,000 properties. Wow. So that's number one. That's the built-in marketing there when it comes to the short-term rental sites, where it's like that property is going to draw more eyes automatically. Number two, what we like to do, and I already briefly touched on it, was I like to take people off of the platforms because it helps you control your business more. And you can do that very cost effectively. So there's this service out there called StayFi. It's a little disc that plugs into the back of your router, and it creates a landing page for your guests to put their email address in to get access to the internet. It's like $6 a month after you purchase this little disc. That's like $100. That way, one of our cabins we have sleeps like 14 people. So originally I would get the initial guest that booked the reservations email, but I would miss out on everyone else's email, right? So that way we can get, if 14 people are staying at that property, we get all the guests' email. And we've never had a complaint about, why do I have to enter my email in, right?
Sure.
So we capture their email, and then through StayFi's platform, we used to do it used to be done through MailChimp, but now they have their own email marketing platform with like templates and everything. You can then remarket to your guests, and you don't have to charge them the 14-15% service fees. You don't have to, and then Airbnb doesn't take their cut, which is like 3% from you. But the service fees are one thing, but on top of that, you have complete control over your guests, especially if you have multiple properties. Like we have multiple different type of properties. We have log cabins, we have A-frames, we're working on the cottages, we're working on other A-frames. You can cross sell your properties as well. So that's one piece when we're talking about marketing that you can do very cost effectively. So you have number one, the unique properties, like the draw, right? Number two, you're taking people off the platform after they stay with you. And you're remarketing to them very cheaply. I'm talking about maybe sending 7 or 8 emails, like seasonal emails throughout the whole year, just to stay top of mind. And then number three, influencer marketing. There's a really cool platform I just found called Stayamo that links influencers, short-term rental influencers, traveling influencers with property owners or hosts. That way, and a lot of times they're not even getting paid. They're getting paid with a free stay, and you're giving them, a lot of times you're giving them those days that wouldn't have booked anyways. Maybe it's a random Tuesday to a Thursday. You can give them a weekend day as well if it's like further into the future that it hasn't booked. But that platform's like a true win-win, where you can get, like, if you don't want to pay for an influencer to come to your property with maybe like 500 to 1,000, maybe it's like a mid-tier influencer of like 100,000, which honestly do really well. Like those niche audiences do very, very well. A lot of times it's like a trade. Like, I'm going to let you stay at my property for free. Maybe you pay for just the cleaning fee. That's what's out of pocket. And then they market your property to their platform. That's a win-win. So like, that's practically my marketing strategy right there. And we've stayed 90% booked, 90 plus percent booked with our occupancy, even through our slow season.
That's great. That's incredible.
Yeah. If you that's want great, me to talk man. To your wife, man, we can.
Yeah, no,
we can tag team on that.
She's a
I mean, it's already a big sell. All right, babe, we're going to go in the further out off the beaten path, build these awesome cabins. It's already a hard sell.
It is. She's a tough in general. I'll tell you a quick story. I wanted to get into this investment fund. And so she's like, okay, just do a little bit. So anyway, so we put 20 grand into this fund. And I'm skeptical because I'm a skeptic too, but I'm like, hey, if I don't do it, I'll beat myself up over it. First month, I just looked, we've just crossed our first 30 days, we made 5 grand. So she was like, wow, that's a pretty good return. We got 32% return in month one. So, you know, a little bit of trust there, but
hey, babe, I've already found an awesome place to put that money. No.
Yeah, exactly. No, for selfish reasons, one reason I want to have you on, because I figured this thing is going to double about every 4 months. So it'll probably give me about $250,000 at the end of next year. And that's then insane, to me, dude.
Whatever you're doing with that. Yeah.
Yeah. My boy made 75 grand off it last month with an initial $25,000 investment. So, you know, I was like, hey, we're going to buy rentals with this. That was our exact strategy. We'll park it here, let it ride, take the compound interest, and then we'll just. We'll compound it more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because yeah, we might go to jail. I'm not sure. You know, you never know what type of investment is. Not just playing everybody.
Right.
Alex, but no, I appreciate the conversation, dude. I love what you're doing. I love the niche down focus. Because I think it's genius. Honestly, I really do for what you're doing in the short-term rental space. And I do think short-term rentals, people sometimes they get too hung up on like, I'm going to buy this house. I'm going to rent it to somebody and get my $400 passive income a month. Not realizing that if you just reevaluate how you would spend that money into a short-term rental, you could probably have an extra money.
Especially, and this is a good example of it. So like we're playing around with the idea of tree houses. I'm going to be really quick on this. You can do like houses on stilts, essentially. That's like, what's the highest and best use of my capital? If you develop like a 500 square foot tree house that has like a kitchenette and running water and electricity and internet for like $200,000-$300,000, that thing will throw off like $400 to $600 a day. Like,
that's wild.
Ridiculous. And that those numbers are coming from tree houses that are in my market. And I've looked at other tree houses in Washington State and all these like wooded markets, dude. It's like when you think of like that, exactly what you said, like a unique property, highest and best use is going to bring a better average daily rate compared to just like, I'd say like, I hate to say it, but like a boring house, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. If you can go sleep with Bigfoot, you want to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. I've had guests ask about that, man. It's weird.
It's incredible. Hey, am I going to see Bigfoot? Hey, Alex, where can people connect with you? And if they want to work with you, like how could they find more of your content?
Yeah, man. I have a free YouTube channel called Alex Builds that sort of, I created that. I realized I was going to my properties a lot to check up on them. I was like, I'm just going to bring a video camera and just record and just show people what I'm working on. So that's what I do there. AlexDrabo.com is my personal site where you can just check out some of the projects I'm working on as well. If you guys, I'm not open to investing or like raising capital right now, but you guys can check out my previous interviews. And I just put together a course just teaching what I just talked about for the last 30 minutes. That's going to be bdbstrmasterclass.com. I'm sure you'll have it in the show notes, but just quick thing on that. Like I put like spent like 6 months on that. It's like 120 videos, literally start to finish of everything that you need. There's a group coaching once a month in there, templates, everything. I essentially created the course that I wish I had when I started 6 years ago. If I would have had this course I refer to this course back, like if I need like a template or something like, or I forget like where I've lost something, I literally go into my own course to pick up my own stuff. But I if I would have had this course, I probably would have saved like $200,000-$300,000 at this point. If you guys are interested in that, feel free. If you guys aren't, I mean, feel free to just subscribe to the YouTube channel because I talk about just some of the basic stuff that's taught in that course. But yeah.
Cool, Alex. Well, I will have all three of those links, as Alex mentioned. If you're watching this on YouTube, they'll be in the YouTube notes. If you're listening to them on podcast, make sure you, if you're driving, you stop. But then cruise down into the show notes, or if you're driving a Tesla or something like that, I guess it doesn't matter. But Alex, thank you so much. All of Alex's content will be posted in the show notes again. Everybody, please go check it out, because this is the type of stuff for me personally too, you know, that I wish that I would have had when we start getting into it, because it's like you get bits and pieces from everybody. So it's nice when you have a nice comprehensive library that you can go through that walks you A to Z, and then someone you can reach out to for questions. So Alex, thank you so much. I've enjoyed chatting with you, dude.
I appreciate you for having me on, man.